Jacob, let's go ahead on into your report, the shellfish lease regulations in high use areas. And if we have to go a little bit over 12:30, we will, but let's go ahead and get that, okay?
Chairman Bizzle, this is Laura.
Yes, Laura.
He's just going to be 1 minute getting loaded up.
Okay, that is fine. No problem.
He's got the ball now, so it's a few minutes. Thank you.
Okay, no problem at all. And what that'll leave us for tomorrow is the discussion of the 10-year prescription for recovery of the Albemarle Sound Roanoke River striped bass stock and the fisheries management plan, including the flounder allocation and the goals and the goals and objectives of the EST-BFMP. So that'll give us, you know, more time if needed tomorrow. So that'll be a good thing. Okay.
All right, Laura, am I, can y'all hear me, see me?
Yes, good, good.
All right, thank you. Thanks, Laura. Thank you, Mr. Chair. For those who don't remember me, my name is Jacob Boyd, and I'm the Habitat Enhancement Section Chief. And today I'll be updating you on what staff have been working on to reduce shellfish lease user conflicts, including the memo we provided in your briefing book titled Shellfish Lease User Conflict Reduction Update that we based on your motion last August, asking division staff to study the concentration of shellfish leases in given water bodies and bring recommendations on potential user conflicts to the February 2021 meeting. Overview of what I'll be covering today. First, I'll describe the issue and action needed outlined in the memo. Then I'll review the timeline since we last spoke in August, followed by a review of the contents of the memo, including all of the ongoing efforts by the division to reduce shellfish lease user conflicts and the division's recommendations. I will finish by asking the commission's input for next steps. So I want to review the issue and action needed that were included in the memo provided first before going through the rest of the information. Normally we would review this at the end of the presentation, but I think because of the amount and detail of information I'm going to cover, it will help frame our discussion today. I will present user conflict reduction information based on the concentration of shellfish leases in the state's water bodies that we identified as high use areas, and ask the commission's input about whether to proceed with the development of CAPS to further limit shellfish lease acreage in identified high use areas. Because shellfish leases can be very complex, I will review some of the background information that you've seen a few times now to help facilitate discussion of the memo. Since we last spoke in August, staff have been working on studying the concentration of shellfish leases in given water bodies as requested by mapping areas and developing methodologies for area calculations to accurately address the issues surrounding user conflicts with shellfish leases. A memo has been prepared in lieu of an information paper, mainly because much of the information has already been prepared in previous legislative studies. Now I want to give a quick review of important items related to shellfish leases, starting with the governing authorities. Much of the governing authority and regulation for shellfish leases in North Carolina comes from the General Assembly, including the minimum standards required to obtain and hold shellfish leases. Other suitability standards are outlined in the rule, with federal permitting also being required through the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers Nationwide Permit Number 48, Regional Conditions, which authorizes commercial shellfish aquaculture activities. The General Assembly finds that shellfish cultivation provides economic and ecological benefits to North Carolina and declares it is a policy of the state to encourage the development of private shellfish cultivation in ways that are compatible with other public uses. The General Assembly also empowers the Commission to make rules and take steps necessary to develop and approve shellfish cultivation in North Carolina, including giving the Commission authority to limit the number of shellfish lease acres in any area if needed to assure the public that some waters will remain open and free from shellfish cultivation activities. So here's a look at the specific laws providing authority to the Commission to develop and improve shellfish leases in North Carolina. Now let's take a look at the main attraction for our recent discussions about shellfish leases, user conflicts. As we have discussed, North Carolina has seen a substantial increase in user conflicts in recent years, coinciding with the recent expansion of shellfish leases and the use of floating gear. A very common misconception concerning shellfish leases is that viewshed is a public trust right acknowledged under North Carolina common law. Since the passing of Section Law 2019-37, which is commonly referred to as the Shellfish Aquaculture Bill, in July 2019, the division has been hard at work completing the numerous requirements mandated by the bill, as well as other efforts to address user conflicts. Staff have been working to implement the recommendations from multiple studies, including the user conflict study, which was a joint study completed by the division and commission that was mandated by the bill to address user conflicts. This includes developing rule amendments based on the study's recommendations that you have seen multiple times now and will be voting on for final approval tomorrow. Other efforts the division worked on, as you are aware, is the implementation of the shellfish aquaculture tool to increase transparency and improve public input and knowledge of shellfish leases. The Shellfish Aquaculture Bill is an act to provide further support to the shellfish aquaculture industry and contain many different requirements. As discussed, the user conflict study contained multiple recommendations that the division and commission are still working through. The bill had various requirements for the commission to adopt rules, including rule development for the Shellfish Cultivation Lease Review Committee that was set up for hearing shellfish leasing appeals from people other than the applicant who want to appeal a shellfish lease decision. Other studies and directives from the bill included an evaluation of areas suitable for shellfish enterprise areas, including studying areas currently under moratorium, assessing a Pemco Sound Shellfish Aquaculture Pilot Project. We're currently working on developing further recommendations for rule changes to continue implementing the bill's requirements. The user conflict study recommendations make up a large portion of what staff have been and will continue working on. Here are the four recommendations from the user conflict study, including the specific actions outlined to implement each of them. Just to highlight a few efforts, the division partnered with the National Sea Grant Law Center and received funding to develop an interstate technical and networking work group for state aquaculture program managers and extension personnel. We're also working with the NOAA Disaster Preparedness Program, hosting a virtual aquaculture gear management and storm preparedness workshop for North Carolina this April that will provide the aquaculture industry and shellfish farmers in North Carolina with resources and information about aquaculture debris issues, including practical gear management techniques, proper gear anchoring methods, and severe storm preparation strategies. Also, we developed an adjacent riparian owner notification policy that we are implementing this year. As you can see, we have quite a few actions already in progress to address user conflicts with shellfish leases. To dig deeper in what the commission and the division is already doing to help address user conflicts related to shellfish leases, I want to review some specific changes that are currently underway to three of the shellfish lease rules that are to be voted on for final approval tomorrow. These highlighted changes will essentially limit shellfish lease acreage, including the new shellfish lease cumulative impact language, the new 250-foot buffer between shellfish leases, and the increasing 100-foot buffer from developed shorelines to a 250-foot buffer. Other changes will also help reduce user conflicts, including the improved training and marketing requirements. Of these shellfish lease rule changes, which will essentially limit shellfish lease acreage that you will be voting on tomorrow for final approval, the addition of the shellfish lease cumulative impact language was included to link the commission's statutory authority to limit shellfish lease acres in any area where concentrations are high. The division will be developing an implementation policy for the new rule language to provide a framework for determining cumulative impacts of shellfish leases in areas with high concentrations. Now I will discuss the specific findings from the memo provided. The findings include that shellfish leases often conflict with public trust uses, making balancing issues and determining compatibility challenging. A multifaceted approach is required to address user conflict issues, and multiple sources of authority govern the responsibilities of the commission and division for managing shellfish leases in ways that are compatible with other public uses. Other findings include that the commission has authority to adopt rules to limit the number of shellfish leased acres in any area. Other states developed acreage limits as a management tool for shellfish leases in consultation with the fishing industry and other regulatory agencies and stakeholders. And available GIS data, such as current acres of leased waters and closed shellfish growing areas, can inform decisions about limiting shellfish leased acreage. To understand how we calculated the total leasable areas in a water body, we need to understand exactly what we are calculating. Shellfish leases are divided into two types, bottom and water column. You must have a bottom shellfish bottom lease to have a shellfish water column lease, which can be granted over the entire footprint or portion of the bottom lease. The main objective when calculating total acres leased in a water body is to determine the amount of bottom leased for shellfish aquaculture. Therefore, shellfish water column lease acres are not included in calculating total acres leased in a water body to avoid inflation. So in developing these methodologies, first staff identified high use areas, which are water bodies where the number of shellfish leases have increased to the point of taking up large portions of available space and or causing increased user conflicts. Based on the available information, staff identified initial high use areas throughout the state and determined the approximate number of acres that were available for shellfish leases within these high use areas. So when you look at a water body, it can be easy to think that most of the area would be suitable for shellfish leases. However, once you take into consideration all of the numerous restrictions on where shellfish leases can or cannot be located, then many water bodies decrease significantly in area suitable for leasing. To try and answer the question of how much of a water body can be leased, staff developed methodologies for calculating the total leasable acres in a water body. The leasable area calculations were based on the same criteria that are used when reviewing initial shellfish lease applications, which are listed here. These criteria are solely based on definitive data and information. As a first step, the minimum standards are used to identify suitable areas for shellfish leases based on numerous factors, including navigational channels, submerged aquatic vegetation, and existing shellfish resources on the proposed area. The resulting calculation includes only acres that are considered leasable based on the definitive data and information. In other words, it excludes all the areas where you definitely cannot have a shellfish lease. Next, other factors, including federal permitting requirements from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers nationwide permit, must be considered on a case-by-case basis during the shellfish lease application process to determine if a shellfish lease can be cited and how many potential shellfish leases can be sited in a specific area. These other factors cannot be estimated. They play a huge role in determining the size and number of shellfish leases in any given water body. To provide an example of this concept, staff calculated total acres for Stump Sound, which is identified as a high-use area. For the first step, areas in which a shellfish lease cannot be placed based on the definitive data and information were excluded, as you can see in the figure to the left. This was compared to the number of acres currently leased to calculate the potential number of leasable acres still available to be leased, shown in the figure to the right. To complete the exercise, a proposed shellfish lease would then be considered on a case-by-case basis for siting requirements, taking into consideration the other factors to determine if the proposed shellfish lease can be sited in a particular portion of the area in question. It is important to note here, when looking at the potential leasable area map on the right, that the other factors we just discussed, such as the federal permitting requirements through the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, will exclude many more acres than what is shown because those are other factors cannot be estimated and are considered at the time an application is submitted. For instance, just the one-third of the water body federal requirement would reduce the leasable acre shown on the right by at least 30%. Included in the changes to three of the shellfish lease rules, sorry, had to go back, it skipped forward for some reason. Included in the changes to three of the shellfish lease rules that you are voting on tomorrow is the new requirement to add a 250-foot buffer between shellfish leases. Currently, there are no buffer requirements between shellfish leases. The 250-foot buffer will enhance navigation between and around shellfish leases and was developed based on the existing U.S. Army Corps of Engineers setback requirements for U.S. Coast Guard navigational aids. To demonstrate this, the 250-foot buffer between shellfish leases was added to the data layers used in the previous example, where a shellfish lease cannot be placed, as shown in the figure to the left. The potential number of leasable acres was recalculated to include a 250-foot buffer in the figure to the right. Further, to demonstrate how a proposed shellfish lease would be considered on a case-by-case basis for siting requirements in Stump Sound, two new simulated shellfish leases were added to the data layers used in the previous example that included the 250-foot buffer between shellfish leases, as an example shown in the figure to the left. The two new simulated shellfish lease sites used as an example were determined based on the average size of the shellfish leases in the area. The potential number of leasable areas acres was recalculated to include the two new simulated shellfish leases as shown in the figure to the right. This table summarizes the calculations from the previous three slides, showing the maps of Stump Sound with total shellfish lease acres and percent of Stump Sound that currently has shellfish leases for current rule language that doesn't require a 250-foot buffer between shellfish leases, and for the proposed 250-foot buffer between shellfish leases that is included in the potential rule language the Commission is voting on for final approval tomorrow. It also includes calculations for the two new simulated shellfish leases. It is important to note here that the current shellfish leases and percentages of leasable area doesn't add up to 100% because this table doesn't include the percent of the water body taken up by the other data layers, such as the SAV, closed growing areas, et cetera. I'll break this table down further over the next few slides. Here's the table again with the highlighted portion based on the current rule language that does not require a 250-foot buffer between shellfish leases. It shows the current shellfish lease acres as well as the percent of Stump Sound that currently has shellfish leases. It also shows the potential leasable acres remaining once you exclude current shellfish lease acres and the other areas that must be excluded. Here's the table with the highlighted portion that includes the previous calculations for shellfish lease acres and potential leasable area, but with the 250-foot buffer between shellfish leases included. And here's a table again with the highlighted portion that includes the previous calculations for current shellfish lease acres and potential leasable area with the 250-foot buffer between shellfish leases included, and with the same calculations based on the two new simulated shellfish leases. This table does a great job illustrating the overall impact that just the potential new 250-foot buffer between shellfish leases will have on leasable acres in a water body by increasing the footprint of shellfish leases by 23% in Stump Sound. In other words, if the Commission votes to approve the 250-foot buffer between shellfish leases tomorrow, the amount of potential leasable acres will automatically be reduced by 21%, with shellfish leases increasing to 37% of Stump Sound. So as you can see, if approved, the new 250-foot buffer between shellfish leases can do quite a lot to limit shellfish lease acres in a given water body. If the Commission wants to move forward with developing more rules to limit shellfish lease acres, it will be important to take a few factors into consideration. Limiting shellfish acres in high-use areas could shift effort away to other areas that could become high-use areas. In some high-use areas, the shellfish leases may be self-limiting and acreage caps may not yield the intended effect, such as what we just saw in Stump Sound. We also have to take into account the intersection with the shellfish enterprise area development that was mandated by the Shellfish Aquaculture Bill and that the division will be working on over the next year. We also have to consider how to handle new applications within a high-use area that has already met its acreage cap. This will likely take a statutory change because the shellfish lease application process is very prescribed in statute. If the commission wants to move forward with developing more rules to limit shellfish lease acres, the division recommends involving the public and other stakeholders from the beginning to foster stakeholder buy-in, more readily address concerns before rules are implemented, and to maintain transparency in the regulatory process. The division also recommends including an automatic review period, such as a sunset clause, as an opportunity to reevaluate high-use areas to assess appropriateness or to identify new high-use areas. If the commission wants to move forward with developing more rules to limit shellfish lease acres, the division requests feedback on areas identified as high-use areas, other areas of concern to examine further as potential high-use areas, and entities to include for soliciting stakeholder input, such as the commission's advisory committees, industry groups, or other stakeholder groups. Today, we need action from the commission to decide whether to proceed with additional rules to limit shellfish lease acres in areas with high concentrations of shellfish leases. If the decision is yes, then staff would develop the other five high-use areas and any others that the commission puts forth, like what was completed for Stump Sound. Then, staff would develop an issue paper with proposed rules, identify appropriate stakeholder groups, such as industry groups and advisory committees, and then present the information to the stakeholder groups to solicit input. Staff would then provide feedback to the commission to finalize any proposed rule language. Once approved, staff would work on the development of the required fiscal analysis and bring back to the commission to begin the rulemaking process. It's important to note that there are many steps involved with this option, and it will require a large investment of time and resources over the next year or more. The earliest approximate effective date of any rules that would be developed through this option is June 2024. This date is an approximation based on the current rule schedule. If the decision is no to further rulemaking, then staff will continue working on developing and implementing the numerous measures already in place to address user conflicts and limit the amount of shellfish lease acres in areas with high concentrations of shellfish leases. This is a viable option that would allow time for the previous studies, mandates, and recommendations to be fully implemented and for the benefits to be realized before deciding if additional requirements for managing shellfish leases is necessary or appropriate. It is important to note again that the changes to the shellfish lease rules that are to be voted on for final approval tomorrow will essentially limit shellfish lease acres. The earliest approximate effective date of these rules is June 2022. So again, here's the issue and action needed that we discussed earlier and was included in the memo provided. Today, we discussed user conflict reduction information, identified water bodies as high-use areas, and asked the commission's input about whether to proceed with additional rulemaking to further limit shellfish lease acres. And with that, I will take any questions.
Okay, questions and comments.
Hey, this is Sam. Yes. Yeah, so I can really speak to this because my lease is actually in the area on the slide. I'm super enthusiastic about the shellfish cultivation business. I've been doing it for probably 12 years. It's had its ups and downs. It's an extremely difficult business, but has some really good ecological impacts. It's going right with what people want to do. It makes us look good. There's incredible recruitment of juvenile species. So there's lots of good things about it. And however, user conflict is something that is going to be a constant thing, and it is going to have to be a delicate issue taking it on without suppressing the shellfish business. I saw that slide. I believe that a lot of that area, I'd like to ask Jacob too on this, what are the requirements for when people get a survey to have a lease surveyed as far as the oysters and clams and shellfish that are already there? How do they go about proving or disproving that to get a lease?
So as far as an official survey, those aren't required anymore. That was actually taken out of statute back in 2015, I believe. But as far as assessing it to make sure it meets the minimum standards that are in statute and rule, when somebody submits an application, we basically run it through that first set of filters, the data that I showed you, all the different data layers that include SAV, closed areas, all those areas we know where you absolutely cannot have a shellfish lease without even having to go out there and investigate the location. So once we work with the applicant, If they need to modify that footprint to exclude those areas, then if everything passes those minimum standards of the data that we have, then they go out and do a site investigation where they actually go out and sample the entire area, to take random samples to look at natural shellfish density, to look at SAB density, to make sure it also meets those other minimum standards that are not only in our statute and rule, but are the federal permitting requirements to the Army Corps. And so a site can't have more than 10 bushels per acre of natural shellfish there to be able to have a shellfish lease, and also cannot have more than 15% density of SAB. So basically, no more than 50% of the samples can have SAB densities in it. So then once we factor all that into the application, it goes back and we may have to modify the site, the footprint to exclude some of those areas, and then it goes through the rest of the process, which I could talk about for the next hour if you wanted me to. But that's how basically we just we can say whether or not the lease can be there based off of the minimum standards that we have. Then, of course, we have public comment, public hearing, all that public input that we get, which then the user conflicts come into play, stuff like that.
Right. Wow. So y'all's intention here is just kind of basically steer people away from a certain area based on just the thing that there's just going to be too many people in this one area. But even so, they still have to go through a ton of – I mean, if we did do status quo, you'd have to do a bunch of assessment even to an area we maybe is too much to begin with, if I'm understanding correctly. Good.
I was going to say, so we can't take into account, we can't tell somebody where to have a site. Once somebody comes in and applies, we can help them modify it based off of the existing data that we have. And sometimes people come in and put us in a location, and it's completely would need to be excluded. So then they have to actually start over and look for somewhere else. But once we do that, yes, we use those same data layers for every single application that already comes in. We already do that to do basically that exclusionary analysis to see where exactly you cannot have a shellfish lease based off of that. It takes actually going out and doing the investigation to see the other factors into it, like the SAV densities and the shellfish, natural shellfish. Now, user conflicts and stuff, that all obviously comes up a lot during the public comment period, public hearing, and we also send it out to internal reviews from other agencies and other sections within the division to solicit that sort of input and see what kind of commercial and recreational fishing activities are in the area, if it is a high-use area for other recreational activities, and we then take all that into consideration.
Gotcha. So, Go ahead, Martin.
Okay. This is Martin. Jacob, just a quick question. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt Sam. For the seagrass, that you are doing on-site, you always will do an on-site check for that, right?
Correct. If we use the historic last 10 years data SAV layer when we do the initial check, but then we always go out and do that actual site investigation using the patent columns to actually do the sampling. But if somebody applies for a lease that is square in the middle of known SAV data that we have based on that mapping layer, then we exclude that before going out.
Is that mapping layer the 2015 information that APNEP had?
Correct. It's that most updated data layer that was completed last year based off of that last couple of years of sampling that we were doing coordinated with APNEP.
Oh, so this is 2019-2020 data for stump,
yes,
sound, topsail sound.
Right, but we still also take into any data we have for that previous 10-year period, because that's
okay.
And that's all through U.S. Army Corps of Engineers through the regional conditions for the 48 permit. We have an agreement through them, an MOU, about SAV densities and sampling techniques and what we can and can't have as far as all the SAV is concerned.
Okay, I was asking mainly because shoalgrass probably seems to be expanding fairly rapidly. So I'm just curious how up to date your seagrass layer was.
Okay. All right.
Real quick,
Jason, flip back to the other slide first about
what we're going to be considering today, if you would, and then we'll keep on. Okay, perfect. Okay, who was wanting to, okay, go to the next one, forward. There we go.
The one before.
Let's see. Okay, leave that right there if you would. Okay, somebody else was Doug. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, Jacob, I've got a question and then I've got a comment, and I hate to make you move slides, but could you go back to what is actually in Stump Sound in the potential percentage slide that's right beside it?
The table or the map?
The map.
So here's this map.
That's what I want right there. My first question is now, what is the acreage per lease capped at now in this area? Anything, or is it just wide open?
Well, you can't have more than, it has to be less than 10 acres statewide. You can't have more than 50 acres, you know, that you are part of. You know, with this area, it's obviously a lot more restricted. So it'd be very difficult to apply for a lease that large without running into all of these other factors that have to be taken into consideration. And that's why this map, I think, illustrates really well. That pink line outside of the perimeters of the existing leases, so that's what's going to look like if you pass that 250-foot buffer between shellfish leases rule tomorrow. Somebody goes into a site lease now, we can't go within that 250-foot area, whereas the way the rules are now, somebody can site a lease right up beside somebody else's, and there's that meets our minimum standards. So this will already greatly reduce the amount and size of a lease that would go into this area. If you would, I'll show you the next one. That's why we put this as kind of this would be an example. The two pink ones, those are just simulated examples of if somebody came in and put an average size lease on that northern side and southern side, just two more leases like that with the new 250-foot buffer, at that point, that cumulative impact language that y'all are also voting on would definitely come into effect here when making that determination. And I think it would certainly justify basically that area based off of all the data and minimum standards couldn't basically hold any more leases at that point and would, you know.
Right. Well, I understand that, and I'm all for the buffer on new leases. The concern I get from voters and recreational anglers and everybody else is in this area here, you've got a clear navigable path on the north side over there, but in every area that leases go into, wherever it starts getting jagged and zigzag like the bottom part of that, you know, you get people where they're screaming, well, I can't even navigate through it. So I think we should consider a clear and navigable path in any of these areas is also part of a restrictive area, just enough to navigate. And I know what you're going to say, well, you know, there's stuff everywhere, but I mean, your northern side of Stump Sound up there, I can see where that's fine. That's probably, I don't know if that's the intercoastal or not, but I get a lot of complaints from people saying, well, they keep coming in here, and even with the additional leases, we can't navigate without having to run a gauntlet or obstacle course. So I think that maybe in the future you would look at possible language also adhering to that particular concern, I guess is what I'm saying. I mean, I understand what I don't have a problem with the 250-foot, rule at all. I think that'll create some separation, less conflict. But I think also you need to, in every area, you need to be looking at navigation, no matter how small you think is being used.
This is John Batherson. Can the statutory factors for considering a lease application, the public trust uses and navigation is one of those factors in making a compatibility determination. So that's considered in every application as part of evaluating compatibility. In addition to the other public trust consideration. So I'll just offer that up to the commissioner for us.
Okay, great. Catherine, yeah, I think you had something to add. Hold on, let's go with Catherine.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to clarify, since we're so ahead of schedule today, Jacob's presentation included comments about a vote tomorrow. And per your instruction, Mr. Chairman, I'll be prepared to give that presentation later this afternoon. And so what that is a vote for final approval of three shellfish user conflict rules that the commission began back in August, and the final action is for today. And those three rules include several things, but one of those is the 250-foot buffer between leases. So that's a separate action that will come later today, and that the action before the commission for this presentation is if the commission would like staff to pursue development of additional rules that don't exist yet to further limit shellfish lease acreage. So since the timing changed with the presentations, I just wanted to make sure that the two distinct actions were clearly outlined. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Catherine. I appreciate it. Tom, I see you have your hand up.
Yes. So first of all, I just want to compliment Jacob and his team on doing great work. You did very, very well on this issue paper and presentation. It was very informative, and I think you covered it quite well. With all the hot button issues we have at this meeting, this is a really important one, and I don't think I heard from, I wish I would have heard from more people on it, and I think we would have if it was at a different meeting. My concern is I heard from a lot of fishermen last year about this area in particular, and, when it comes to shellfish aquaculture, we can all agree on that it has great benefits for, all stakeholders, and I just want industry to understand that, this is a delicate process. It needs to be navigated delicately. And the one thing that I really liked about this this proposal is the more involvement with stakeholder groups, whether it's reaching out to industry. And that means outside of the typical approval process we go into, because even with the best ability of the division, there's going to be a lot of people which don't know this is going on. And without working directly with other stakeholders, whether they're fishing guides or, boaters from the area, you're never really going to understand how people use this area unless you look at these specific areas. And, maybe I'm just waxing nostalgic to when we could all meet in person and have, meetings like that. But, I think that going forward, that's a really important part of how we look at these, high use areas and how we, and how everyone can coexist together.
This is Martin.
Anybody?
I'd like to make I think Jacob needs some official advisory things, so I'd like to make a motion.
Okay, Martin, go ahead.
Jacob, can you go back to that slide of yes and no?
Just one second. I got to give it back to Jacob.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, can I respond real quick to?
Hey, who are we talking? Who's talking?
Jacob.
Okay, Jacob. Yes. Go ahead.
just one comment to Doug, Commissioner Doug. Director Batherson was saying, we also can't put it in marked or unmarked channels, so navigational channels. So if somebody comes and applies for a lease, we're looking at both of those. And the Commissioner Roller's point, that's exactly the approach that we're looking to take anyway. It's just a more holistic approach to going out and getting that stakeholder input and feedback as we work through these other issues, such as the shellfish enterprise areas and whatnot. So we really want to get feedback from all different groups and stakeholders.
Okay. Sounds good.
Sounds great. Well, if I can see that slide that had the yes.
Yeah, Dana,
no,
I think is working on it, or Dana's
yeah.
Go to Jacob, and there we go, and keep on going. Keep on.
Kim and Bizzle, this is Laura.
Yes, Laura.
Yes, there.
There we go.
I just wanted to clarify, so while Jacob has his presentation up, you can craft your motion, and Patricia will work on it in the background, and when we've gotten to a good spot, we'll switch over to Patricia, and you can review the full motion.
Perfect.
Okay. I'd like to make a let's go back one.
I hit a button on accident. I think we're good now.
Okay, I'd like to make a motion that we do not proceed with additional rulemaking. Rather, we wait to see how the ongoing efforts, how effective the ongoing efforts are before additional rulemaking occurs.
So you do not want the staff to be looking into the potential for additional needed rules?
Well, yeah, because I think they're already doing a lot of that already. So I guess explanation of it, it seems to me that they're already looking into additional rules. They already are doing additional efforts, and I think letting those work through before we consider other additional rules is a good way to go.
Okay. All right. Bring the motion up, please, when you get a chance.
So I guess a short version would be we will not proceed with additional rulemaking beyond that which the staff, the division, is already pursuing.
Okay. Of course, keep in mind, you know, we are not really proceeding with additional rulemaking. They are looking into the potential of us doing future rulemaking and for them to look into any other issues that are needed for rulemaking. Okay, is that, let's see.
Okay. Staff is already pursuing, yeah.
Okay. Okay, is that your motion as you have made it?
Yes.
Okay, is there a second to this motion?
I'll second that for the sake of discussion.
Okay.
That's
Sam.
Sam, yes.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Sam Romano, second.
Martin, if you could, I guess, I don't know exactly what the, I thought that's what they were saying in the motion, or then in their recommendation, was that they were just going to look into it more, but I guess maybe it's where in the, I don't know, the details is kind of where I'm at, but I understand where you're coming from, and that's why I kind of support talking through it further. Maybe you can clarify for me.
I probably need some clarification because I thought that they were seeking information from us about what to do.
Well, and what they were seeking for us to do is to look into other rulemaking.
Okay.
To tell them to look into other potential rulemaking.
I think actually a better way of phrasing what I said is not proceed with additional rulemaking at this time. Beyond that, which staff is already pursuing.
Okay. Sam, is that change okay with you, Sam?
Yeah, that sounds good to me. I mean, I'm like one step at a time. I mean, I know this is a critical issue. I don't know what would be differently either way. Go ahead, Doug.
Ms. Cross, Martin, does this mean that we're precluding that anything they're going to let us vote on later today, or we're looking at the issues we're voting on today and then not developing anything until after that, until they go further with more study? I'm a little confused.
I would understand it to be the second, that we're going to vote on what they're already giving us. They're already going to pursue with more rules. They're going to come with us with the enterprise zones in the future. All of that's in the works.
Let me get the presentation.
I'm sorry, this is Doug again. Is that the way this is going to play out? Because I'm a little confused.
Okay. All right. So Jacob, what is it that you all are looking for us to do? What are your requests for us to consider?
And Jacob, if I can jump in.
Go ahead.
So, okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What I think the action that the division is looking for is to seek input from the commission regarding proceeding with the development of caps to limit shellfish acreage in high use areas. And Jacob, is that the focus of this discussion?
Yes, sir. So if the commission wanted us to make additional rules specifically for what Director Bathurston just said, or to continue with all the other things that we have going on, including the vote now today, for those additional rules. So it's just those, do you want us to move forward with those new specific ones for additional rulemaking, or just continue to do what we have been doing with the rulemaking cycle?
Okay, does everybody understand what the request is?
Yeah, what's confusing me is you use the word or. And so I'm not quite sure what's being asked, because you said pursue caps or continue with what we're doing. And that, I'm kind of confused now.
So, okay, so that's a great point, Commissioner Posey. So that if you voted to do additional rules for this, it would be on top of that, because we're going to be doing the stuff under the no column anyway. But if we voted for yes, we would be doing the stuff in the no column in addition to more rulemaking that was in the yes column to limit acres, that very specific language. So that's a good point. We're going to be doing everything in the no column anyway. It's just whether or not you want us to pursue those specific other rules at this time, or let everything that we're doing that's in the no column play out and see where we're at.
In that case, I'd like to withdraw my motion if Sam is amenable to it, because I was hearing that or, and so I misunderstood.
Sam, okay to withdraw it? So, can't hear you, Sam. Was that okay to withdraw it? I think you're muted. There you go.
I'm okay to withdraw. Yes, sir.
Okay, great. All right. So what the chair is looking for is a motion to direct the staff to look into additional rulemaking for these shellfish lease regulations in high use areas. Is there such a motion?
So moved.
Who was that?
Doug Cross, sorry.
Please everybody announce who you are. Not that I don't love you or don't know you, but it just makes things easier. Okay, motion. Okay, let's get the motion up here.
Could you repeat the motion, please?
Okay, I believe the motion is to direct DME staff to study additional rulemaking for shellfish lease regulations in high use areas. Jacob, is that what y'all need to do your work?
It really depends on what the commission wants.
Does this make your life easier to do your job?
No, sir. It adds. This is going to add a lot of additional time and resources to what we're already trying to achieve.
Okay. But is this what you all were asking for us to consider?
This is what we were asking you to consider, if this is what you wanted based off of your last motion, or if all the things that we are currently doing and will be doing to limit shellfish lease acres already and to curb user conflicts, to see how those actually contribute, since they, you know, are just getting into effect. The rules that you'll be voting on today will not haven't been into effect yet, that will be limiting acres. So this would be, again, on top of all that other stuff, as far as looking at those specific caps in these areas, which some of the other rules you're voting on today is already going to do, basically.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Mr. Chairman, this is Doug.
This is shellfish leases. They're very complicated.
I understand it is. This is new ground, and this is, I understand.
Mr. Chairman, this is Doug Cross.
Yes, sir.
I withdraw the motion.
Okay.
Chairman Bissell, if I may, this is Laura.
Yes, Laura.
Could we, Jacob, would you pull up your yes and no slide? I think we've gotten a little bit confused. I just want to
look back. I think we've got a little sideways on us a little bit.
Robert. This is John Batherson here.
Okay. Robert, let me get John first. Go ahead, Director Batherson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think Dr. Posey may have had it right the first time. I hate to throw a monkey wrench in there about what was being proposed. But go ahead.
I completely agree. I completely agree with Director Batherson. That first motion was more in line with the way I just described it.
Okay, so if we just flat out vote for a status quo right now, would that do the same thing as the original motion? Because that's kind of what we're doing, and y'all keep on doing the work you're doing without any extra work.
Except exactly. That I don't think that they're going to do status quo. They are moving forward with a number of proposals, so it's not status quo.
Well, the status quo of their work is what I'm getting at.
And this is Robert.
Yes. Go ahead, Robert.
Yeah, my question is exactly what are they? I mean, can you list out real quick what you're currently working on so we can see that and, you know, not worry about what we might get developed in the future? I think it was the 250-foot setbacks. Is that right? So that would continue?
Correct. So today, instead of tomorrow, you will be voting on the adding of the shellfish cumulative impact language, the adding of the 250-foot buffer between shellfish leases, and increasing the 100-foot buffer from a developed shoreline to a 250-foot buffer. So all of that has gone through all the review, and you're voting on it today for final approval. And when if those three get voted on for final approval, those will limit shellfish lease acreage significantly in some areas, such as Stump Sound. And then we will be working on how to implement the cumulative impact policy. And we're also still working through all of these recommendations that came out of the user conflict study, which was mandated by the Shellfish Aquaculture Bill. We have to work on the shellfish enterprise areas, which was mandated by the Shellfish Aquaculture Bill, as well as the other recommendations for rule and possibly statute changes. So I guess status quo is we're still working on really a lot of things. Some of them were just starting, some of them were in the in-between, but we'll be working for the next 5 or 6 years on some of these mandates and recommendations that came out of all of the studies that we've already done. So we're going to be going out basically to get all that stakeholder input from various groups for the shellfish enterprise areas anyway. So we're going to be doing basically everything that's in the yes column, but we're not going to have to kind of stop and then do a specific issue paper for, you know, developing those caps in areas. We're going to take more of the holistic approach of going out and getting feedback on all of it. And at the end of the day, that may be one of the recommendations that comes out of it once we do all that feedback. But at this point, you know, we're trying to focus on all the things we have going on now.
Yeah. So if you go back to the yes, no page, if we go with the no, then everything you just said keeps going in motion. And if that's the case, I think that's enough to look at right now. So it would be to not proceed with additional rulemaking, because I think everything that you're looking at right now that you just showed on those last couple slides, it's the things that I was concerned about anyway. I'm not sure about everybody else.
The intent of my original motion, though, is that it just seems unusual to vote for no rulemaking and then an hour later undergo a rulemaking.
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
That's why my original motion was phrased the way it was. So otherwise, we're saying status quo, no rulemaking, and then an hour later, we do it.
Okay.
Right.
I tell you what, let me get our rulemaking guru back online. Catherine, can you kind of add some clarity and direction to this, please?
I'll try to recap for everybody. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
I think the point that staff is trying to get across is that there are multiple efforts about shellfish leases going on in parallel that each have their own time frame. The presentation that Jacob gave this morning right now is relative to the commission gauging the commission's interest in a parallel effort that would be alongside all of the other things that Jacob just recapped, to be a new group of rulemaking to limit caps. So to set a cap limit on acreage that would be available for shellfish leases in plain terms, just like that says. And as short as that sentence is, that's where this yes, no slide captures. To do that, it would take a lot of resources, and it would be over a period of a couple of years, most likely, to get the stakeholder input that would be necessary to make it successful. In the meantime, we have our first batch of rules that will be for your final vote after lunch today, and that will be a great first step or next step of a way to limit shellfish lease acres, primarily through the 250-foot buffer between leases. Right behind it are a lot of other efforts that the staff is developing to implement the results of the previous studies and previous session laws that mandate those changes occur. So, Mr. Chairman, I don't know if that helps to clarify, but I think the nouns that are in play for this presentation are what the director recapped about limiting shellfish lease acres by way of an acreage cap in high use areas, and maybe a motion surrounding the presence or absence of support of rules to do that will help crystallize this agenda item and keep it distinct from other rulemaking efforts that the commission needs to undertake.
Is everybody clearer on what we're doing with Catherine's explanation? We're looking at doing. Does anybody have any questions of Catherine? Okay, if not, the chair is still waiting for a motion.
I'm not sure it requires a motion. I think we can just simply decide we're not going to ask for additional rulemaking.
That's correct. This is Joe Masterson. Technically, okay. I don't think you need to vote at all.
So just walk away.
Yeah.
We'll say thank you, Jacob, for your presentation and your work.
Yeah.
And we're done. Okay?
You're welcome.
All right. Lunchtime. Okay, we will convene back at 1:30. It's 12:23 right now. Y'all have been so well behaved, I'll give you 7 extra minutes. So I'll see y'all back here at 1:30.